This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we're celebrating National Poetry Month. It's easy to listen to Sekou Sundiata's poems like good songs over and over again because you like the music. Sundiata is one of the performance poets who has attracted a following among many young people who like the rhymes and rhythms of rap. Sundiata often reads with a band behind him and has created several music theater works. He co-founded a record label devoted to spoken word. That label, Mouth Almighty, has just released his first CD. It's called The Blue Oneness of Dreams. We'll hear an excerpt of it later. We invited Sekou Sundiata to read and talk about his work. Here he is reading his poem about how his old neighborhood has changed. The poem is called Harlem, A Letter Home.
It hurts me to my heart to see you like this, underworld and underweight, impossible to be with, impossible to leave. I must approach you the way I approach music sometimes, late at night and by myself, when people who can't understand are long gone, like the famous who want your infamy without your tragedy, like the rich who want your treasure without your pain. Too hard to catch up and too hard to follow, I keep looking for you anyway. Over by Harlem River Drive, where years ago you went underground, leaving two dead policemen in your trail. Then backstage at the old Apollo Theater, where we used to be waiting, pulling on the stars, begging them to kiss us like they sing. I walk around with this photograph of you at the African American Day Parade, looking like a 33rd degree Mason, an old African, a Parliament Funkadelic, an Eastern Star, a grand and flowing feather, and a Marcus Garvey hat. But in your ashy, sunken face, I see a falling of flesh from bone. I see your red eyes, your blue hands, your protruding ribs, where once I entered and lived. You were my living room, my address, and my home. What remains the same is how little, how much you've changed. You don't belong to Bird or Billy anymore. You don't belong to Malcolm or Langston anymore. And no point telling me whether you left them or they left you, since the whole thing was out of your hands. Since you have no more control over death than you do over life, but you make it and you shape it and you make it and you shape it every day. Maybe that's why you never sleep. Maybe that's why the rings around your eyes are thin lines between love and hate that you can enter and leave at any point, the definition of a circle. Which brings you right back to where Bird plays and Billy sings, to Malcolm and Langston's words, the songs, the speeches, the poems, more alive now than them. But you're coming back is your power and your redemption. Oh, Harlem, oh, Harlem, oh, Harlem, oh, Harlem, oh, Harlem. I have searched every place, every body, every name I have ever been for you. If not your beauty, then your ugliness. If not your rhythm, then your story. Oh, Harlem, oh, Harlem, oh, Harlem. It hurts me to my heart to see you like this.
That was Sekou Sundiata reading Harlem, A Letter Home. Thanks for reading that. And I should mention that you also read that on your new CD, Sekou Sundiata, The Blue Oneness of Dreams. You're a poet who uses your voice in, I think, a particularly musical way. And I wonder if you were always reading that way or if you had to find your voice.
Well, I mean, you know, I think the way I present my work has evolved over time. You know, and I've thought about it. You know, in the beginning, it wasn't very conscious, really a very conscious development. But as I thought about it over time, I really set about trying to develop a sound and approach that I thought was uniquely mine. I should also say that, you know, in the way that I started writing poetry and got into poetry, I really felt that I was trying to ground myself, first and foremost, in African-American culture. And so my first love in African-American culture was black speech and black music. And really, I think to understand something about black speech and black music, you know, helps anyone understand what's going on in black literature, whether it's fiction, poetry, playwriting, whatever. So for me, it has always been a question of the musicality of language, the musicality of black speech. So by the time I started writing and reading my poetry, I was really started being interested in developing a sound that was mine, much in the way that, you know, jazz musicians. Music to me has always been a reference point and a resource, you know. In jazz, you know, certain things are given. By the time a musician gets on the bandstand, technique is a given, harmony is a given. That you've mastered your instrument is all given. You know, the thing that has to be revealed yet is how you sound, which is to say, what do you have to say? What is your particular take on your instrument and your take on the world? So that you may have two tenor saxophone players, both playing body and soul, for example, but each of them having something fresh and different to say. And, you know, I kind of use that as a model as I, over time, have developed my way of reading and presenting my poetry.
Now, when you realized, like, the musicality of speech, you could have gone into acting or even singing, but you wrote. What led you to writing?
Well, you know, I guess once I was in school, I really just, I loved to write. You know, I love to read and I love to write and I like books. And I, of course, I loved music, but, and, you know, I tried singing as well, but
did you?
Nothing called me, nothing appealed to my imagination as much as writing. I mean, even before I started writing poetry, those times when I was, you know, reading or writing, you know, I discovered that this was a pathway to, you know, a source of great joy for me, a source of great pleasure, which was to be in my imagination, you know, where, you know, where there are no boundaries, where I can imagine anything, that seemed more possible to me as a writer than, you know, let's say, as a musician or as a singer or even an actor.
My guest is poet Sekou Sundiata. He has a new CD called The Blue Oneness of Dreams. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with poet Sekou Sundiata. He has a new CD called The Blue Oneness of Dreams. What were you writing about when you first started to write?
I was making stuff up.
They call it fiction.
Yeah, right. you know, I recall, when I was in school, I would sometimes have to write a book report. Sometimes I would do the book report and do this alternative book report. Let's call it that as well. Sometimes I would just do my alternative book report, which is I would make up a book and I'd make up a title. And, you know, and I'd report on it. And I'd look in the phone book and try and find a name for an author, just a name that sounded right.
Now, your teacher may have called that cheating.
Exactly.
So what kind of books would you make up?
You know, I liked adventure stuff then. You know, I'd make up books about war or about, you know, the frontier or, you know, things like that. And it's interesting, you know, the stuff that I made up was very close to the stuff I was reading, resembled very much the stuff I was reading in school. So I didn't write about my neighborhood and my community yet because I didn't realize that my neighborhood and my community and my life was something you could write about.
How did you realize that it was?
I think towards, going into the 1970s, towards the end of the 60s, I started hearing poetry by poets who were, you know, already developing at that point, who were writing these poems using, first of all, the kind of vernacular culture and speech that I heard in the community, you know, and wrote about subjects and themes that I felt very close to, that I felt connected to. I think of a poet, Victor Hernandez Cruz, for example, Puerto Rican poet, you know, who wrote about Puerto Ricans in New York, who wrote about, you know, the projects, who wrote about the Lower East Side, which was so, you know, so familiar to me. Or Miri Baraka, you know, who wrote about black music. You know, when I started hearing, you know, music figures showing up in his poetry, like James Brown or John Coltrane, you know, it gave me a whole other look at what was going on around me, what was going on in the culture, and it elevated, in my own eyes, my own culture. So I really feel, you know, in a lot of ways that poetry and that literature saved my life.
Saved it from what?
Well, you know, I mean, I could have gone in any number of different directions, you know. I tried to be... I tried to be in the streets for a while, you know, I tried to be the tough guy. I tried to do a lot of that stuff, you know? It wasn't me, you know, it just wasn't my life. But I had nothing else going on instead of that. You know, I went to school and I did fairly well in school and I was sort of interested. I played sports, particularly basketball, and, you know, I was interested in that and I played okay. But there was nothing really at that point really pulling me and engaging me in such a way that, you know, made me want to say, hey, I really want to do this, you know, until I started hearing that poetry and started experimenting with it. And it became a real possibility. And the other part of it is that it gave me a way to connect up to my culture and to black life in a way that I thought was vital, in a way that I thought was really socially engaged, particularly at that time. And that was very important to me, you know, to have some involvement in the struggles and the life and, you know, the mythology of my community and my people.
Since you had tried to be the tough guy but didn't think you were very convincing at that, when you got more interested in writing and particularly in poetry, did you feel you had to, you know, masculinize it in any way? Did it feel like it wasn't either hip enough or masculine enough for you?
So, you know, I mean, the fortunate thing for me is that at that time, something close to what's going on now was happening. You know, right now we're in this sort of revival or of poetry and spoken word. And at that time, it was very popular.
Oh, it's like the Last Poets and Baraka.
Right, right. So you could say you were a poet and be hip.
Revolutionary.
Right, you know. And I was very much involved in the movement at that time. You know, I was an activist. I was a radical. So, you know, all of these things fit. You know, and it made me, you know, it was a way to be cultured and civilized, which is to say a way to be hip.
Were you writing revolutionary poems?
Yeah, I wrote revolutionary poems. I wrote militant poems. I wrote most of my poems in those days were, you know, about social issues in the main, you know. And I always had a couple of love poems going. I guess part of that is the inspiration of popular music, you know. I always thought that one of the great songwriters to me, whose work was just so poetic, was Smokey Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Smokey Robinson, I think, wrote great, great lyrics, great love lyrics.
I think this would be a good time to hear another one of your poems. I'm going to ask you to do another poem that you also do on your new CD, and the poem is Shout Out. So before you do the poem for us, maybe tell us a little bit about writing it and about, I think, a particularly musical kind of poem.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, if I had to describe, you know, a qualifying thing for me as a poet, you know, people say, well, you're a performance poet or whatever. That's not really how I identify myself. I think of myself, if anything, as a ritual poet, meaning that I think of poetry as ritual. I think that is the roots of it, you know, the roots of it in chanting and dance, et cetera, et cetera. So I was really thinking about trying to create a poem that would have a ritual feel to it in the sense of being an opening, an introduction to what is to follow, whether it's, you know, more poems or the set with the band. This is typically how I open a set when I perform with my band, the body of the poem. I'll just also say that, you know, Shout Out is a tradition on radio, particularly on black radio, where basically people call up the radio station and give shout outs. You know, they give a shout out to, you know, my cousin, a shout out to my girlfriend, a shout out to whoever, you know, and it really is just a dedication. I always loved that because it was just a chance for, you know, everyday folk to get access to this mass media, to the airwaves, and make a dedication. So here it is, Shout Out. Here's to the best words in the right place at the perfect time. Here's to 3-hour dinners and long conversations, to the philosophical ramifications of a beautiful day. To the 12 steppers at the 13th step, may they never forget the first step. To the increase, to the decrease, to the do, to the did, to the do, to the did, to the do, to the did, to the done, done. To the lonely, to the brokenhearted, to the new blue haiku. Here's to all or nothing at all. Here's to the sick and the shut in. To the was you been, to the is you in, to was deep and deep, to was down and down, to the lost and the blind and the almost found. Here's to the crazy, the lazy, the bored, the ignored, the beginners, the sinners, the losers, the winners, to the smooth and the cool, and even to the fools. Here's to your ex-best friend, to the rule benders and the repeat offenders, to the lovers and the troublers, the engaging, the enraging, to the healers and the feelers and the fixers and the tricksters, to a star falling through a dream, to a dream when you know what it means, to the bottom, to the root, to the bass, boom, to the drum. To the was you been, to the is you in, to was deep and deep, to was down and down, to the lost and the blind and the almost found. Here's to somebody within the sound of your voice this morning. Here's to somebody who can't be within the sound of your voice tonight. To a low cholesterol pig sandwich smothered in sign without the pork. To a light buzz in your head and a soundtrack in your mind going on and on and on and on like a good time. Here's to promises that break by themselves. Here's to the breaks with great promise. Here's to people who don't wait in the car when you tell them to wait in the car. Here's to what you forgot and who you forgot. Here's to the unforgettable. To the was you been, to the is you in, to was deep and deep, to was down and down, to the lost and the blind and the almost found. Here's to the hip-hoppers, the don't stoppers, heads nodding in the digital glow of their beloved studios. To the incredible, indelible impressions made by the gazes you gaze in the faces of strangers. To yourself you ask, could this be God straight up, or is it a mask? Here's to the tribe of the hyper-cyber, tripping at the virtual most outpost, at the edge, on the tip, believing that what they hear is the mothership drawing near. To the was you been, to the is you in, to was deep and deep, to was down and down, to the lost and the blind and the almost found.
I love hearing you read that. What are some of the more unusual places you've read that in?
Unusual places. I perform in Europe, you know, frequently. And that's always an unusual place to me to be reading because I only speak English, you know. To read that in situations where the audience, most of the audience, you know, is not understanding it in the language in which it's written is quite unusual to me.
But they could still get it sonically.
Yeah, I think that's what happens. Yeah. Which is, one of the things I really appreciate about, I really think that poetry, I have a colleague, Pablo Medina, who's a wonderful poet and fiction writer, who says that, poetry communicates before meaning even, and I really believe that there is something before the actual content, the meaning and the content of the words that is communicated by poetry that I think allows it to sometimes cross those language barriers.
My guest is poet Sekou Sindiata. He has a new CD called The Blue Oneness of Dreams. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with poet Sekou Sindiata. He has a new CD called The Blue Oneness of Dreams. You have music behind you on a lot of the tracks on your new CD. Do you work on the music yourself? Do you interact with the arranger for it?
Oh, yeah, no question. And, The co-producer on this CD is a longtime friend and collaborator by the name of Douglas Booth. And he and I wrote some of the music together. He wrote a great deal of music himself. He did all the arranging and the orchestration. But, yeah, we work very, very closely. Sometimes the music comes first and then the poetry comes. Sometimes it's the other way around. But we come up with arrangements together. So it really is a collaboration.
Let me play something from the new CD that has music behind you, and I consider this poem to be one of your greatest hits. You've you've also done a video of this poem that our listeners might have seen on MTV. This is called Blink Your Eyes, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about how you're using the music behind you, how you work this out.
Okay. There are a couple of things going on in this particular version of it. One is that I wrote the poem really sort of, responding to this well-documented and well-known antagonistic relationship between black and Latino males in particular and the police. So that was one part of it in terms of subject matter. The other part of it was, I teach, and I started getting a number of students a few years back who were coming in to write poetry who were really influenced by hip-hop and really wanted to write in a way that was very different from what I knew and from the way I sort of came up or developed as a writer. And so they really, I guess my reference point for a lot of people I came through with was jazz. People who wrote and tried to use jazz as a reference point. For them, it was hip-hop. So, I tried to write this poem as sort of a dedication to them. Then the other part is a dedication to Sterling Brown, who was many people called the Dean of Black Poetry, and who wrote, I guess, particularly in a so-called folk idiom and in a blues idiom very much. Musically, I don't know. We were sort of finding our way in the studio. We'd done this poem in a number of different ways, and we were really trying to find something fresh to make it sort of new and interesting to us. One of the things that happened is I made a sample and used a sample in this cut, and it's a sample of Sweet Honey in the Rock singing group, singing the blues, Your Worries Ain't Like Mine, which I thought was fitting, given the subject matter of the piece. And then, of course, I thought it should have some sort of drive to it, some sort of driving pulse, some sort of driving beat. You know, so all of those ideas sort of came together to form what we have now.
Okay, well, let's hear it. This is the poem Blink Your Eyes from Seiko Sundiata's new CD, The Blue Oneness of Dreams.
I was on my way to see my woman, but the law said I was on my way through a red light, red light, red light. And if you saw my woman, you could understand I was just being a man. It wasn't about no light, it was about my ride. And if you saw my ride, you could dig that too, you dig? Huh? Do you really dig? Sunroof, stereo, radio, radio, sunroof, stereo, radio. Black leather bucket seats sit low. You know the body's cool, but the tires are worn. Ride when the hard times come, ride when they're gone. In other words, Jack, the light was green. I could wake up in the morning without a warning, and my world could change. Blink your eyes, blink your eyes. All depends on the skin, all depends on the skin you live in. All depends on the skin, all depends on the skin you live in. Up to the window come the law with his hand on his gun. What's up, what's happening? I said, I guess that's when I really broke the law. He said a routine, step out the car. He said a routine, assume the position. Hands up in the air, you know the routine, like you just don't care. License and registration. Deep was the night and the light did it deep. And the deep was the night from the light from the north star on the car door. I could see deja vu, we've been through this before. Why did you stop me? Somebody, body, 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 body. Somebody had to stop you. I watched the news. You always lose. You're unreliable. That's undeniable. This is serious. You could be dangerous. I could wake up in the morning without warning, and my world could change. Blink your eyes. Blink your eyes. All depends on the skin. All depends on the skin you live in. All depends on the skin. All depends on the skin you live in. I could wake up in the morning without warning, and my world could change.
People who are into rap really like rhyme. Do you think that that's made it safe to like poetry?
I think so. I think hip hop rap has really, if there's any single thing I could point to that has led the way and opened the doors for this current revival and this interest in poetry, I think that's been it. If for no other reason than it has prepared people to listen to the spoken word, and then again to the spoken word with music as well.
Now, what's your relationship to rhymes?
My relationship to rhyme.
I mean, do you like working with rhymes? You sometimes do.
Oh yeah, no question. I do. Although I don't set out to rhyme. You know, mm-hmm. I don't. You know, I write pretty much what's called open verse, not free verse, but open verse, where you know the poem really sort of dictates what the form is going to be. But yeah, no, I do like to rhyme. I think of it as a musical device. It's one of the ways I have learned to get to musicality in my writing. I mean, you know, there's certain techniques, rhyming, you know, repetition, use of song forms. I borrow a great deal from music, and from particularly from popular music.
You know, there's a line in Harlem, A Letter Home, that I think so clearly shows the influence of song lyrics on your poems. When you're talking about being at the Apollo Theater and everybody wanting to be kissed the way they say. Why don't you do the line? Because I'm just paraphrasing.
We used to be backstage at the Apollo waiting for the stars, begging them to kiss us like they say. You know, it's a funny thing about that is, you know, I guess, you know, people project their own fantasies and dreams onto the lead singer in particular.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Right, so, you know, I always thought that, you know, that this must be the way they kiss, you know, the way they sing. It must be that beautiful, that compelling, you know.
And now you think?
I you know, maybe true.
Would you ever think when you're reading that people must project that onto you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a power spot, you know, to be in front of the band.
That's right.
Yeah, to be the front man in a band and you got the microphone and the spotlight and, mm-hmm. you know, that is a mythic place, especially in American culture, you know. So I think, you know, it has probably less to do with me than the power of the position itself, you know.
Well, Seiko Sundiata, thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to do it.
Seiko Sundiata has a new CD called The Blue Oneness of Dreams. It's on Mouth Almighty Records.